When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a literary podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're happy to introduce our Summer 2024 Book Club, the Romantasy Edition. We will cover 9 books total, some oldies, some newbies, and some goodies. Check out our social media for the complete lineup. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This week, we are discussing one of our most highly requested books, From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text. Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. I am so excited for us to finally talk about this.
Yeah, it's so funny because for years, at this point, it's been years.
Yeah.
You were like, we are not going to discuss this book, and yet here we are.
Here we are.
Discussing this book.
How the turntables turned.
Yep.
Okay, so if anyone is new to the podcast, we normally do a literary analysis. We've done the Court of Thorns and Roses series. We've done the first Crescent City series. But in between, we like to mix things up, and us mixing up is talking about more books.
Yes, so book club is not about analysis. Now, that being said, Jack and I are just full up our asses about books in general.
Wow. I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. So we don't know how to talk about books without talking about writing.
Yeah.
So consider this a very condensed version of what we do in a regular season, but in a book club format.
What are our quick credentials?
I have a undergraduate degree in creative writing and a master's in education.
And I have a creative writing degree in undergraduate because that's where we met, and a master's in comparative literature. All that means is that we've got college debt to
exactly.
Talk about this.
Exactly.
Just hopefully this is like a different interpretation of book club than you might normally hear or see out there.
If we talk about liking something, we're going to talk about why we like something and why we think it's effective. But we're not going to do the deep dive chapter by chapter that we would normally do in a literary analysis season.
And most importantly, we would never, ever want to shame anyone. If you don't agree with what we're talking about for a book, that is completely okay. Please let us know. And, you know, if there is something about a book that we don't like, that does not make it invalid. Your thoughts or your opinions invalid. So,
right.
I just want to make people know, because we're going to be, I don't want to say we're criticizing things, but
we're going to have opinions.
Yeah. And I don't want anyone to feel shamed. Like, you know, reading is a privilege as it is. So no one should feel shamed about what they like.
Yeah. Jack might like something that I don't like. I might like something Jack doesn't
like. That's impossible. We are one human. We are one.
I refuse to believe. And the readers might like something we don't like, and we might like something the readers don't like, and that's just our prerogative.
Yeah.
Everybody's prerogative.
I'm trying to think of something that I like that you don't like.
Pickles.
Okay, you're right.
I'm right.
Yeah. I just start listing everything else. Watermelon, almonds.
Okay, but I'm allergic to all of those.
All right, so let's dive into From Blood and Ash. So the first thing that we're covering are overall thoughts. Would you like to start?
Sure. So the first thought that struck me is, if you're an enemies to lover, lover. So if you love the trope enemies to lover, I can see why this book is appealing.
Yeah.
It's enemies to lover to enemies to lover to enemies to lover. And the layers of it are fun. And I can see why that's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit of difference in when Amy read it and when I read it for the first time. I read this for the first time when it was first published. I want to say, what year was that published?
I don't even know. 2015?
No, I thought it was 2015, but then I saw something online. And it was like 2020, and I was bullshit.
I think that's A Touch of Darkness was 2020.
I don't know. I don't know, Amy.
I don't know.
It's 2020.
Holy cow.
I know. I know. I swear it felt earlier, like sooner than that. I don't know. I don't understand that. But
I just barely listened to it last week.
Yeah. So I do know that it was in a post-ACOTAR hangover world that I was introduced to it. So I needed something. And that's what a lot of people came into this as. And that's how it was originally marketed, was your post-ACOTAR looking for your next romantic-y book.
Yeah.
And when I was in that, you know, that haze of my life, I enjoyed it. It was fun. Like, there were some things that I found issues with, which we'll discuss. But I think that, you know, some of our listeners might relate to what I'm, where I was at reading, versus some listeners might be where you're at with reading, where for years you've just heard of the plot holes, of the sequels, of like all these other issues with it. So I think it's interesting to us have our different point of views.
Yeah. And now this makes way more sense, because I remember in 2021 when we started the podcast, everyone was like, From Blood and Ash, From Blood and Ash. Now it makes more sense that it was more relevant.
Yeah.
In terms of like being new at the time.
Yeah.
Quid pro quo, would you like to share your first general thought?
Yeah. My thoughts reading it this time. Big difference thought reading it the first time. Maybe because all we do now is analysis for the show, but I caught a lot more plot holes.
Yeah.
That was really hard for me to stay in it. I know that when we put out a poll to our listeners saying, like, what were your thoughts from Blood and Ash? I kid you not, it was, you had like three categories of people. It was the people that are like, I freaking love this book. I don't care about all the plot. I don't care about anything else. Give me my blinders. I'm happy. Love this book.
Yeah.
Love the series. And then you have people who say, love the first book or second book. Couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I land. And then you have the third category where it's like, couldn't even finish the first.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's so divided. Like just the amount of people who feel passionately one way or another with it. And I can see that.
Yeah.
Whether that's a mark of good writing, I don't know.
Right.
Or is it a mark of bad writing techniques? I don't know.
Yeah, it is hard to say. Only because, again, I could say one thing about ACOTAR and then I said something completely different after the analysis.
Yeah.
Right. And we're not doing a deep dive. However, I do fall in the camp of there are a lot of things that are happening in the narrative that do pull me out of the book. We can go into that later.
Yeah.
Some other first general thoughts.
Uh-huh.
I think that it does a good job for a first book setting up the world. And we'll talk about world building later. I also thought that like first chapter, second chapter of like the first scene that you get of her at the Red Pearl. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, yeah.
Was a fun way to start a book.
It was great.
I thought that, I think, was one of the best elements of this book.
I think the parts that the book has fun in, it has fun.
Yeah.
So when the fun parts, they're funnin'. They're funnin' real hard. It's like a girl goes up to a bedroom and, you know, meets the hot bodyguard who... she's seen from afar. Oh my God, take me now. And then, or other parts that are really fun. Like their, not that was their first kiss, but like other times where the other first kiss, or when he finds her in the, like trying to steal that book, the dirty book, you know, like there are these moments where there's so much fun that I can't deny I was smiling or laughing out loud.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's like the tropes go hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes too hard.
The tropes are tropey, and that's what you're there for.
Yeah.
You're there for the tropes, and the tropes do themselves justice. Ish.
They do themselves. I think the tropes, you know, like, I think you listed them, like, enemies to lovers. I'll even say friends to lovers, but even though that's, like, at one point, he says, we're friends. And she goes, I guess we are friends. I'm like, no, you're not. You're a situationship.
Yeah. Mistaken identity?
Oh,
or
mistaken.
False identity?
Oh, false identity. Reveal. Chosen family.
Yeah.
Other ones. Oh, stabby heroine. Stab. That's what they call him, like a stabby femo.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what they call him now.
Something like that.
Okay.
It's like, it's that, again, this was kind of like, think of that post-ACOTAR world where you have this, like, I don't want to say this is a direct product of Pharah and ACOTAR.
Right. I see what you're saying.
But I'm also going to not say that.
Right.
You can kind of see where Jennifer goes hard, where SJM and Pharah did not.
Yep.
And I think sometimes that works to at a disadvantage of trying to be so different.
I agree.
So we're going to go into some listener thoughts. We're going to be trickling them in throughout the episode. For future episodes, if you want to submit thoughts, please follow us on Instagram. That's where we gather thoughts and we put out the prompt there. This one says, had so much potential, but it was so bad. Read 1 and 2, couldn't get through 3.
So that's an example of our couldn't get through it camp.
Yeah, it's, and I understand. And like, I agree, the potential of the rest of the series is definitely there.
Yeah. I will say that having finished the first book, I have no desire to continue in the series.
All right.
It was enough of a taste for me that I'm like, I get the picture.
I had the opposite reaction. I read it. I finished it. And I was like, you can do it, Jack. You can go back in. And every time I get back and I get pulled in, I'm just like I wanted to keep reading because it's like, it ends on a proposal. Like, yes, that's problematic. And we'll discuss that later. But it's not even a proposal. He's just like, this is what we're doing. I'm like, yeah. Oh, love it. Forced marriage of convenience. Forced marriage. I'm on board. Right. Give me more tropes.
Yeah.
It's funny. I had the opposite reaction. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Our next listener said in their comment, fun at first and then gets repetitive AF.
The part for me that could not, like, that just kept repeating was when they're out in the woods. And I felt like she just kept running away from him and she kept getting captured.
Yes.
And then kept running away and kept getting captured.
Yep.
Like, there was a few times where it was definitely, I'm like, wait, didn't we just do this? Yeah, we just did this, right?
Yeah.
We were here a minute ago.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I will also say some of the repetition is also in her thought process, in Poppy's thought processes and the narrative style.
Yeah.
And her trying to reason through things. Which I think gets into our next comment.
Yep. The female lead is very whiny as the books go on. It was too annoying to continue for me. Poppy. Let's talk about Poppy.
I had a hard time caring about Poppy.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one of the reasons why. She is painted as being very ignorant of the truth because of the situation that she's in. And that's very, very believable.
Yeah.
And she's eager for information, can't find the information, and is not sure if she wants to ascend. I respect all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't remember what chapter this is, but somewhere 10, 15, 20% into the book, she's like, oh yeah, and the Ascended are immortal. I'm like, what? If you knew this the whole time, why am I only finding this out now, bitch?
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so, Poppy, I think what was hard about her character is the inconsistencies in her thought processes.
Yeah.
She is very naive and she describes herself as being awkward. And it's like, I'm this awkward, naive person, which would make sense for her character.
Yeah.
But we were told, not shown. what we were shown was a very witty, very quick-witted female lead who always stood up for herself. And I like all these things. And I like that character is a cool character.
Yeah.
Does not correspond with someone who has essentially grown up in a cult, being idolized in that cult.
And isolated.
And extremely isolated.
Yeah.
These two people do not coexist.
Yeah. Yet they do in Poppy.
Yeah, they do in Poppy.
And they're incompatible.
Yeah. And that was the hard thing for me, because it's like, look, I'm on board. I can believe, like, feel sorry for this poor girl that is so isolated. And at one point, I think she says to Hawk, or the artist formerly known as Hawk, early on in the book, like, I don't know how to kiss. And that was like a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that was like something that would have kept going throughout, where it's like she vocalizes a question and she's like, should I not have asked this question? Or it's almost like she's not even allowed to be near people. So she doesn't even get an opportunity to observe how others interact. So it's like, I really like, I can support that character, or I can support this badass, I'm going to kick your ass, karate chop, stabbing motion. But again, like, I can do either, but don't ask me to do both at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I do. We'll get into her training and her skill abilities with weapons in a moment, but she can be quick-witted if her caregivers are quick-witted.
Yeah.
Right? If Victor was also quick-witted, great. Fine. I think I would have liked to see her, like you said, do more of that stumbling.
Mm-hmm.
Is this how it's supposed to be? Am I allowed to ask this question?
Yeah.
I would have liked to see that quirkiness, and because it wouldn't be for the sake of being quirky.
It would have been vulnerable.
It would have been vulnerable. It would have been someone who's not exposed to social mores or to what societal norms are. And I would have loved to see her stumble and mess up with Hawk.
Yeah.
And he find that endearing.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that.
I would absolutely. I'm liking this character that we're talking about.
Yeah, me too.
It's like, because that definitely would have been so fun to work with, where it's like this confident, naive person, you know?
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that at all. I will say some pros about Poppy.
Yeah.
I appreciate her not being hard on her scars.
Yes,
love that she was never embarrassed of it. But I think that Jennifer did a good job between Poppy not being embarrassed of them, but also being aware of them and kind of feeling insecure at certain moments.
Yep.
You know, one of the comments that we received is saying that they love having the representation of a more full-figured female lead, which I'd agree with if Jennifer actually did keep her as a fuller figure female lead, because at one point at the end of the book she wears children's pants. My ass can't fit into children's pants.
I think so. Let's go back to the good thing. I agree. I think in the narrative process and being in Poppy's mind, there is a really good balance of understanding that she's aware of people's gaze and perception of her scars. What makes her insecure is their discomfort.
Yeah.
Not that she's uncomfortable with the way she looks.
Agreed.
It's the fact that people have a reaction that makes her uncomfortable.
Yeah. Because when you have Hawk who looks at her, her uncomfort level goes away pretty quickly.
Right.
Because he finds her to be beautiful.
Right.
And then even, God, who's his like wolf buddy?
Kieran.
Thank you. Even Kieran's like, you know, where I'm from, the scars are revered.
Right.
I do appreciate all that. And I mean, like, Poppy's also funny. Like, I will give it to Jennifer. There are some funny narrative moments, but sometimes the narrative moments would take me so far out of it, because it's like, you're not having Poppy speak, you're having the author speak right now. It felt like reading an author's funny
inner monologue.
Yeah, but at the same time, Poppy is very Poppy.
Yeah. So another thing I did like, I did like the relationship between Poppy and Victor.
Yeah.
I do think that that was done well.
Very well.
I think that the care between the two of them was done well. I think that the fighting between the two of them was done well, like in terms of like their disagreements.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really did feel, we're going to have a spoiler warning at the top, right?
I mean, we're talking about these books. They should know.
Yeah. I really did feel when Victor meets a tragic end, and Poppy feels that. And I thought that was handled well.
I agree. You know, you and I love a good character death. Like, make me feel like shit. I want to replay this death scene in my head. That was by far my favorite scene in the entire book, is when Victor died and then she loses it on the Lord guy.
Yes. Yes. That is definitely, I equate that to the having fun just as much as like at the red, beginning at the Red Pearl.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, that was a
It was so much fun.
It was so much
that
fun.
That murder and massacre. Ugh.
So much fun.
So much fun. You should hear what we do on a Friday night. We read, guys. We read. Yeah, that was my favorite scene. I do like her relationship with Tawny.
Yes, I do too.
I thought Tawny was done really well.
Yeah. And I thought the insecurities around her relationship with Tawny was also done well.
Yeah.
Because like, she's where
are
she's
you friends
like,
with me for real reasons or not?
Right, right, right. And her hesitancy to vocalize that, to like disrupt what they have, I thought was really reflective of what it is to be 18, 19 and have friendships where you're like, I really like this person, but maybe they don't actually really like me the way I like them or they seem to like me.
Yeah. And also I will say, like, Jennifer's characters, they're very vibrant. You know, there was never a sense of lacking in character. Like, there was no one who was necessarily vague. Do I think they're flushed out? Maybe not. But I do feel like her characters are very vibrant in who they are.
I agree. So one of our listeners responded to our call for thoughts and said, I honestly had a fun time reading it. Kind of sucks that it gets a lot of hate. And I hope what we're saying is not being interpreted as hate. It's us, just our thoughts. Don't get me wrong. I still listen to this book at 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible. I didn't stop reading it.
Yeah.
Or listening to it, technically. And it was fun. And there was no I've only met a handful of books where I DNF'd.
Yeah.
And this was not one of them.
Yep.
I was happy to continue regardless of any of the hangups that I had. And so I wanted to shift the conversation a little bit to elements that we thought were earned. I'm going to be honest. One of the best parts of this book is the final sex scene.
It's a famous one. The fan art is fantastic.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. But like, there's the yo-yoing of the like passion and anger and passion and anger, and for it to culminate in the snow outside, he bites her because he's angry at her, and then they go wild. I was
and
just
then
like,
she's on top of him.
It was worth all the yo-yoing for me. I was like, okay, I the back and forth that's led up until this was worth it. I have to say, because this is a high praise for me, because the first 50, 60, 70% of the book, I was like, why did you lick her nipples at the beginning and that's all we get? Why does it take so long to get more from you?
You know what? I hadn't even like processed the idea of that slow burn. Like, we do get nipple licking and then we have
then
to wait
nothing.
All the way to the end.
Nothing.
It is that is good. That is some good slow burn and then immediate burn. I will say their relationship of things of like that are earned. Her willingness to forgive him or at least not try to kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, and let's be real, it's forgiveness. Like, as much as she says like, I'm still mad at you, like she's mad, but you can see her loyalty being built up throughout the entire book.
Yeah.
Very quickly. I mean, it's quickly in the sense that, like, I don't know what the time period is, but you do see that loyalty established pretty early on. So then by the time we get to the end of the book and she's like, fine, I guess I won't try to kill you again.
Yeah.
I forgive you. It's like, that's
even
where,
though I did try to kill you.
Yeah.
And I could have won.
I did like where she stabbed him in the heart and he was just like, excuse me.
And she's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's why.
I do appreciate that she didn't hold back.
In her fighting with him, yeah.
Yeah.
And nor did she hold back in her fucking of him.
No, not at all.
It does hurt my heart and brain that she's 18.
Yes, also that.
I don't like that.
Especially because he's 200 years old?
200 something. Another one bites the dust. Another child with another 200-year-old man taking advantage.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
And lying to her.
I do feel like his manipulation comes in full force at the end, but we'll get to Hawk in a minute. Continuing on this conversation of the Poppy and Hawk dynamic, I'm going to read another listener thought. I loved this book. It was so different, and Poppy and Hawk were amazing together. Love their dynamic. And that's something that I did see continuously in some of the responses was the dynamic between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Banter was great.
Yeah.
It was good banter. Sometimes too good.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. For me, the characters are only interesting because they are together in the same room.
Wow. Sorry. I'm processing that. Interesting fact. Go on.
Separately, they're not interesting.
Wow. I.
And this is just my personal opinion.
No, I'm just questioning my life. I'm like, was I ever more interesting with someone else in the room with me? And I'm looking at her.
We are a good duo.
We're a great duo.
But I do think it comes across to me as a lot of the energy. And what makes the book enjoyable is the dynamic between these two characters, is the banter, is the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
However, independently of each other,
yeah,
I don't know that chemistry exists for the reader and the character.
I think that's a great point, because you think about, and we don't see Hawk on his own. We only have Poppy on her own. And I think about Poppy with Victor and Poppy with Tawny. And it was entertaining enough, but it doesn't have that pizzazz when it's like Hawk and Poppy together.
I was going to say, all you're doing is waiting until Hawk comes back in the room.
Yeah. And again, I think this kind of goes back to the pendulum of what was being asked of the time of writing this. And, you know, whether people agree or not, bringing back ACOTAR. But when you think about Farrah, who was just so not funny in the early books. And
so
just
not
like
funny.
Very like surly, like girl had been through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Poppy, who's just kind of like this burst of energy, who's a lot more, you know, her inner monologue was like, zinga after zinga after zinga. And it's a product of its time.
Yeah.
And I think what made her different and what made people like the difference is because of the product of the time, where you have a lot of books where, I mean, other, like, yeah, a lot of books where it's just like these very serious female leads.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a female lead that's a little bit more boisterous, a little bit more go with the flow. And I think about other SJM characters of Aelin. Even then, even if she's like funny and, you know, has her moments, it's still a very serious series.
Yeah.
And it's not with Poppy because she's fun. I get it.
Right. Right. Poppy. Yeah. And I can understand why people find her fun.
Yeah.
And I did too at moments. So.
The way you looked at me with the most innocent eyes, like, and at moments, I tolerated her too.
I think before we move from Poppy on to maybe Hawk, the one other thing we have to discuss with Poppy is her training. Her training with Victor and her ability with weapons.
Yep.
It's both believable and not believable to me. So
some
level of skill is believable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Being able, you know, to use a bow and arrow, sure.
Yeah. You can get good at bow and arrow pretty quickly.
Right. Ability to use a sword, sure. Ability to hack an ascended to pieces, I'm not, or to fight
all
among
the Kraven.
Other rebels.
Yeah, to fight off the Kraven, to
be
even put up a good fight against Hawk at one point. Like,
right.
It's more than just like she's a fighter, she's an elite level fighter.
Right, which when you're training in secret for a couple hours a day doesn't strike me as enough.
I don't even think it was a couple hours a day. It was probably like a few times a week. If you think about what her schedule was, you know, they talked about going to see the priestess, going to go do other things. Like, you know, I think saying 7 days a week or even 6 days a week is being generous when you have some of the things that they had to do.
I think we had to, like with any fantasy series, we have to suspend our disbelief at some point. And this was one of those moments because we don't have enough information. How many years is it? 13 years, 3 days a week, two hours a time? Maybe it is believable. This was an example of a lot of showing, not telling.
Yeah.
Or a lot of telling, not showing. And it was hard for me to get on board with some of it.
All right. The only answer to that is for you and I to start training to become warriors and see how... How long it takes. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of work ahead of us.
I will give up within week one.
Great. So long as we're happy to die together. It's bow and arrow. Bow and arrow you can learn quickly.
Yeah, I think, how would I have done it differently? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't have an answer to that because, like, even in our own writings, we come across the same thing. Like, I do love a female lead that can kick ass and can do things. And, you know, it is hard to see what's believable and what's not. And, you know, sometimes we just have to ask our listeners to go ahead and lean in a little bit.
Right. And I think it's not hard to do that with Poppy.
Yeah.
But if you step back and want to analyze it, it becomes harder to do so.
So in regards to Poppy and her training, there was just like one other thing that kind of like pulled me out of it. And I am someone who did MMA for 4 years, kickboxing for those 4 years, and then dabbled in boxing during that time. I can't box. It requires a lot of footwork. It's too much. Like, I, you know, my feet, I am on the floor kind of a person. You actually, the amount of footwork it is to like move around is a lot. And you have to be really in control of your body. Mm-hmm. You can see that with Poppy, you know, like she's running, she's leaping, she's very much in control of her own body. But then she'll say something like, I can't waltz, I'll be a klutz out there. And I'm like, no, you won't. You're an elite level fighter.
Right.
You may not understand rhythm.
Right. But that doesn't...
Don't say that you're going to be a klutz.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, that's all. That was one of the big ones. Big ones. I have a list of things.
So I'm looking at the listener thoughts, and this one is not a good segue, but I'm reading it anyway.
Okay.
Can't get over how the entire world building is done via question and answer. But Hawk is fire.
Yeah, we'll get into world building. We'll get into world building.
I was like, this is a bad segue, but I have to read this.
No, it's great. I remember reading that one. That one was funny. Okay, so Hawk.
Is he actually attractive?
He's supposed to be.
Exactly. Everyone says he's attractive, but is he attractive?
Why are you making me question this?
Because my memory of the description of him was just like black curly hair and black lashes.
He's a basic white dude.
He is a basic
white
dude.
You know I love my basic white boys.
There's really nothing memorable about him.
You know, how long is she supposed to go on and on about, like, his eyes were the color of this questionable thing that isn't human?
Gold?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's these color eyes aren't normal. I'm not going to question this.
Yeah, I know.
They're just so brown. They're almost gold.
They're so amber. They're gold.
That's a normal eye color. That's fine. La-di-da. Anyway, Hawk, I mean, is he attractive? Let's pretend he is.
Okay. But that was my first question is he actually attractive?
Or is she just horny?
Or is she just horny?
Maybe he just has abs.
Well, and he always smiles with one side of his face. So
I can't. And he has dimples.
And he has dimples. Like, that's what she's attracted to. It's the dimples and the smirking.
There's a thing on TikTok, online in general, but it's like, is he hot or is he just on a stage playing a guitar?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a great question.
Yeah.
Because so often he's just a guy playing a guitar on stage.
Is he hot or is he just wearing leather?
What? What leather? Where's the leather?
I think
I had assless chaps in my head.
I'm thinking his. I thought his guard's uniform was all black leather.
That is an option. I was trying to do ones that I relate to, like, in this world.
Assless chaps.
We live in West Hollywood. I've seen a fair share of assless chaps.
That's true.
It's, I mean, like, other ones where, like, I fall for where it's like, is he hot or is he just wearing a fitted black t-shirt?
Yeah, it's usually the black t-shirt that's doing all the work.
Is he hot or did he just roll up his sleeves and now you can see his forearms?
And if he's got veiny forearms, I'm dead.
We're fucked. Like, what? All we're, like, suddenly amazed that a human body has veins? You know, assless chaps aside, I think that, you know, Hawk is like just one of those, like, I have to just believe it in the way that we believe that Poppy is a master arms woman. Yeah, like, she can kick ass. I'm just going to believe that he is just as hot as she describes. Like, he's tall, has black curly hair. He's got abs, according to the audiobook, a British accent.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, your type, straight up.
Damn. Yeah, got called out. Hawk almost, in my mind, it felt like, became a caricature of himself.
Yep.
At points.
Yep. Especially towards the end.
Especially towards the end. We get this person who is all charisma, all charm, all... Like, I'm just so amazed by you, Poppy. Like, again, this is going off the audiobook. But, like, he's just so enthralled with her. And he's just so taken by her charm and stuff.
Right. You're more than I ever imagined.
Oh, like, over and over. Like, at that point, like, she was just like, ha, 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 that's cute. Like, girl, you got to be insulted at one point.
Yeah, it's true. Like, oh, you thought I was dumb.
Yeah, like, it's the way that we would not. That's the difference between an 18-year-old and someone that has their brain fully formed. The way that we would have gone in on someone that's like, you're not what I imagined. First time, fine. Second time, bitch, what do you want? What do you want me to be?
Yeah.
I do think that he is, it was harder to like him in the end for me.
Yeah, I think that his charm is curious because I called the twist from the second we meet him.
Absolutely.
So I was just waiting for it to happen the entire book. And despite knowing what was coming, I didn't necessarily get the sense that he was being insincere.
Yes.
So for me, it is really difficult to go from that Hawk before they leave the Duchess's castle and go to the queen and get caught in the forest and whatnot. And then there's no charm left.
He ends up becoming an asshole. And maybe this is our, you know, if we wanted to use our literary analysis brains, right? Because I agree, there's no charm left at the end. He's kind of, he's a huge dick. Now, one could argue the Hawk that she had at the beginning of the book, he wasn't surrounded by his men, so therefore he didn't have to put on any kind of airs. Now he's with a group of people who know that he's the prince.
Right.
So, you know, maybe he doesn't make, like, if we wanted to analyze it, that would be the route.
Yeah.
But I did feel like snark replaced the charm.
Yeah. I see what you're saying about how he's with his men, he's with in a place where he's in power and he has to put on airs. I think if I analyzed it, I would also say the more he reveals of himself, the more he is revealing how much he hates himself. And therefore, he takes that out on Poppy so that she must hate him too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because the more that she realizes the truth about him and that becomes like layered, that layers start to come off, the meaner he does become to her.
Yeah. And so I could see that being the trajectory. I think I'm disappointed that she just takes it.
I agree. I'm at the end. I know we said earlier, yes, it makes sense that she would forgive him.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, no. If we were to rewrite this, I would have loved her to have gotten up off of him after they just had sex, right? And I would just describe something like, she gets off of him so quickly that he like jerks at the sensation, right? Of like, now it's cold. And then maybe she would look at him, have like a single tear in her eye and be like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And just like walk away. I want her trust to be completely defeated, like gone from him. I really wanted her defeated. And she wasn't defeated at any point. And I feel like her being defeated would be a better punishment to him.
Yeah, I agree. I think what bothers me the most, and this is about their relationship, is that Poppy never has power.
Yep. Yep.
And for as kind as Hawk is in the beginning of like wanting her to be able to make her own choices, and if she wants to break the rules, he'll be there to support her as long as she's safe. She still is powerless the whole time.
Absolutely.
To me, in my mind, her going to the Red Pearl is the only choice she got to make of her own free will.
Yeah.
And everything else was manipulation.
I will even go. So, you know, this is bringing me into another part I really wanted us to discuss, was that last bit in the forest, right? Where I'm going to start from when they have sex for the first time to the end.
Okay.
And to your point, that was a moment where her internal monologue is, this is my choice. I get to do this. I know what I'm doing. I'm not the maiden. I'm going to live my life. All of this, yes, but he lied to you.
Yeah.
And that's a violation. Yep. And to me, that's a form of non-consent.
Yep, absolutely.
If you're not getting the facts of who you're sleeping with for the first time, mm-hmm. if you don't even know his real name, if he's withholding all of these things, that is no longer consent.
Right.
And her one powerful, like her other than the Red Pearl, but her other one big powerful moment was taken away by him because he chose to proceed with her not having all the information about him.
Yeah.
And I absolutely hate when books do this and when real life men do this. Mm-hmm. And it's the, I'm going to warn you right now that if I stay inside, there is no innocent stuff. Like, if I stay in the night with you, we're going to have sex.
I'm not holding back.
I can't hold back.
Yeah.
I can't do all these things. It's going to kill me if I do. Now you've put the ownership and fault and blame onto the woman.
For her wishing to be like, hey, maybe I'm not ready.
Or no, like, if you don't let me in, or if I stay in, I'm no longer in charge. Therefore, if you let me in, it's on you.
Yeah.
I hate when men pull that shit, because it's like, I'm allowed to say no at any point. You could be already inside me and I'm allowed to say no and you back the fuck off. Mm-hmm. And that was not, and I hate the narrative when it's not that.
Yep.
Of the like respectful, and I knew if I were to say anything, he would back away. He would stop. And that it didn't feel safe anymore. And so you have that, his like, and it's not a threat, but it's mildly threatening, mixed with the fact that she doesn't know who he is. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to not just forgive him, but forgive her for forgiving him.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The final sex scene is still really hot.
Yeah.
Just problematic. I want her to hate him a little more.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could get away with that final sex scene. All of it, except for her reaction at the end.
Yeah.
I think you could have gone from, like, done everything that she did do, and I would have believed it more, and I feel like it would have been executed better had her reaction at the end wasn't like, because I think he says something along the lines of, aren't you mad at me? She goes, yeah. Aren't you mad at me? Yeah. Let's hold hands and walk back.
Yeah, like, exactly. We'll deal with this later.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I don't think that's how it works, babe.
No, it's not.
That's not.
I mean, I don't think so. Not in my relationship.
Are you mad that I had a hand in killing off your only father figure? Yeah. Are you mad that I lied to you about who I am? Yes.
And then had sex with you and made you believe I was still that person.
Yeah. And then he gets mad at her being like, you forgot to remember it was real. Oh my God. Suck a dick. Suck a fat, smelly dick, you shit.
Remember, we're talking about Hawk, folks. We're not talking about anybody else.
Exactly. And I want it to be the most nasty ass dick that you need to suck. Piece of shit answer there. I really hope my mom doesn't listen to this episode. She's going to be like, you're so crude. I'm like, yeah, I'm really mad. And this fake character.
Yeah, I think he'd be a hot fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he could be funny, but I don't know that I like him. Actually, no, I know for a fact I don't like him.
Mm-hmm. Imagine me, I'm already gagging. Imagine me coming home, like, with a guy, I'm going home to guy with you, like, be like, Amy, meet this guy I'm dating, and it's Hawk.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
It's like.
I'd be like, babe. You've obviously got Stockholm syndrome or something, because this is not good.
But have you lifted his shirt and looked at his abs? And did I mention he's tall? And we also have that other trope where it's like, I'm just a small girl and he's a big boy and he's so tall. It's like, give me my 5'8 representation.
I was going to say, it is frustrating when it glorifies the teeny tiny petite woman with the big strong man.
Even though she's supposed to be curvy. And that's the other thing that was never played. Like, we were told she is curvy. No matter what, I can't get thin. Okay, make it, reference it more.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah. To me, it was like, she's a size 6 and everyone else is a size 2.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't a real curvy thing for me.
No, agreed.
Because you can't also tell me your eyes are at the same level as his nipples, basically. Or like his...
Yeah. She's like... Because I think she says that he's over a foot taller than her.
Right.
Have you seen couples like that? I'm sure if anyone's listening and you're in a relationship like that, I'm sure it's glorious.
My brother and sister-in-law.
It's just like... I just want to know how it works. It's...
Well, when...
You're determined... No, I've seen enough videos. Not of your brother and sister-in-law.
Hannah listens to this, by the way.
I was wondering which one. Is she really a foot shorter?
She's 5'2". Justin's 6'2".
Is he?
Yeah. Justin's 6'2".
When I met him? Are you sure he didn't grow? In my mind, he was like a solid 5'8".
No.
Oh. Shocked. Hannah, please go back and tell Justin. I'm shocked that he's taller than me.
He is taller than you.
Wow. I had no memory of that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. Stick around for part two, which airs on Thursday. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. If you would like to submit your take on any of the books we plan to discuss later this summer, please be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we ask our listeners for submissions. If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk.
If you think about it, time is a conspiracy.
Well, yeah, because it was made by men.
Exactly. And we can't guarantee it's linear.
Right.
So the fact that it's the end of March, it's men's problem.
It's men's fault.
It's men's fault. There is logic there.
There is logic there. I completely agree.
Thank you. So excited. I get to see your face while we record somewhat.
Wow.
Somewhat.
That's a personal choice.
What did you say? It's a personal choice?
Yeah.
Don't avoid me. Look at my face.
No. I was saying that's your...
I know.
You put the mic there.
I know.
So that was your personal choice.
I'm watching you now.